Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy, and this podcast is a wonderful excuse for me to have a chat with a published author about what inspires them to write, how they go about the writing and publishing process, and what effect becoming an author has had on their life. And I also find out what tips they have for other aspiring writers. I am delighted to have Helen Dewdney on the show today, although you may better know her as The Complaining Cow. Helen is a consumer champion, a journalist, blogger, consultant, and the best-selling author of How to Complain and 101 Habits of an Effective Complainer. Helen is a regular on BBC TV, radio, and in loads of magazines and newspapers, so it's a real treat to have her here on my show. Thank you so much for being my guest on the podcast today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So tell me about your books.
Well, I have two. I have How to Complain, The Essential Consumer Guide to Getting Refunds, Redress and Results, and 101 Habits of an Effective Complainer.
So you like complaining then?
It's an interesting one. People say to you, do you like complaining? I don't particularly, but I just feel it's my right. So if something's gone wrong, if something's faulty, I've received bad service, it's in breach of consumer law, then I will seek redress because that's what I do. And I like to empower other people to do it because other people get fobbed off. And I say, this is how not to get fobbed off. Here are some template letters. Here are your consumer laws. Here are your rights. Go use it. And I sort of tend to say, you know, it's, I wrote the book, you know, throw the book at them, literally.
Yeah. But, you need to buy the paperback for that, presumably, unless you're writing your Kindle.
Yeah, it is a paperback. Yeah.
So what inspired you to start writing? I guess that's what it was. Was it seeing people being ripped off?
Yeah, well, it sort of goes back to when I started my blog. And I started my blog as a hobby back in 2012, I think. Mm-hmm. And I just did it as a hobby. I'd had my son and he was 4, I think, then. And I was doing freelance work, excuse me, and I just set up as a hobby and I was just doing stories about how I'd got money back for friends and family and stuff. Mm. And it began to sort of gain in popularity and people were asking questions. So then I did a tips post of how to complain effectively and it grew more and more from that. And I had a book which was very old from Which, and it was 150 letters that get results or something. And of course, it was completely and utterly out of date. And so I would refer back to occasionally and go, okay, now I need to go and look for the most up-to-date thing. So it was back in 2013, 2014, I saw this absolute gap in the market because the book that I was looking for wasn't there. And first of all, I didn't think about writing a book. My first thought was to write to Which and say, where's your update to your book? I want to buy it. And they basically came back and said, everything's online. We've put everything on the website, so we're not going to do a book. And I thought, there are lots of people who won't do that. They want a book. They want to be able to flip through the book. They want to be able to look at cars, or they want to know where to go, and they want some template letters and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I thought, it's one of those things, isn't it? If, you know, someone else isn't doing it, do it yourself.
It's such a great idea for writing a book, isn't it? If there's something out there that you want, or maybe if there's something in the past that you would have wanted and you couldn't find it, and then you acquire the knowledge yourself, go and write the book about it, because you're not going to be the only person that wants that book. I mean, there's
absolutely
no way.
Absolutely. And I thought, I thought, well, the fact that the blog grew, it was just a hobby. I was mucking about, literally just mucking about on it. And then I thought, you know, where's the book? You know, and actually, there's clearly a huge gap here. And it's been a bestseller for 6 years. So wow, I said 2014.
That is really impressive.
And it's still the bestseller at Amazon, you know, which just goes to show, I'll have to update it, which is a pain in the neck. Mm-hmm. But it just shows how much it is needed, don't they?
So how did you go about writing it? It must have been quite difficult to plan to make sure that you sort of covered every situation and every response.
I thought I did a little bit of how did Which do it, because it was good. And I thought they did sectors. So I thought that's the easiest way. That's what people will look at. You know, I've got a problem with my car, I've got a problem with my house, I've got a problem with, you know, my bank or whatever. So I just went into sort of sectors, and I had got some blog posts about how to help people, or I had stories. So I had my own stories or stories where I'd helped other people. And I had all some of those. And so I thought, actually, to bring the book to life and to show people that it works, I'm going to put some stories in there as well, some real life case studies, if you like, to see that, you know, works. Because that's different. That's not out there. And so I thought, well, the thing that I really like is templates. People just want it easy. They just want to go, I want to put this in, put in my own policy number and, you know, what happened and send it off. So I sort of did the chapters, I think. I sort of did the chapters saying these are going to be the sectors. And then small claims court through in the end, and then the differences for Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales. And then sort of wrote a chapter at a time.
Okay.
Well, no, then I thought, yeah, the beginning was tips, the section on tips, section on consumer law, and then it was into sectors.
Right.
Yeah. So, and then I just wrote sort of bits and pieces. And then when I was writing blog posts, I was putting, okay, that's written. I'm now going to put that over to the book. But the biggest pain in the neck for it was I wrote it in 2014 and there was a new consumer law coming out in October 2015. I then had to update it less than a year later. I had to update the blooming thing. And then all the way through it, it still got for items or services pre-October the 1st, 2015, use this law. And after that, use this law.
Oh, gosh.
Which is an absolute nightmare. So for when it comes to reprinting it and redoing the typeset and all of that, it's an absolute pain in the neck because I had to go and do that on every template. There's 60 templates or something in there.
Oh,
and then
wow.
It's throughout it. So I had to go find and replace all of that. But now it's just hit 6 years. So it's now all the previous stuff can come out. And then that means all the typesetting, it'll all move, it'll all, the template will all go to different pages. So I would advise you, if you're ever going to write a book, don't write one that goes out of date because you have to keep updating it. It's a pain in the neck because I just can't, face, you know, the book being out there and people buying out of date information. So
I update
it. And then I give a free update, not in a free book, but the free changes and download on my site to people who already bought it.
I was going to say, because, yeah, I mean, that if you've got people that have bought the original version and then the law changes, then assuming that they've liked it and they found it useful, they go out and buy the updated version, surely. They not?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose really in marketing terms and business terms, it's probably a really stupid policy. I should just let people buy the update that version. But I just haven't got it in me because I'm so more about empowering people that I just go, you know, this is what changed. You know, the last one was, I don't know, about 20 pages or sort of stuff. But it probably is a silly move, really, business-wise. But I just, it just sort of integrity-wise, it just didn't sit with me not to tell people. So it is more work, it is more time, and it is more stuff I'm not getting paid for, so it is stupid, but I still do it.
But at the same time, I mean, people will probably go and buy the book anyway. You know, it's the fact that you have the stuff online for them to get the free updates, I think, would actually encourage people to just buy the updated book anyway, because they can see that you're not doing it, you're not ripping them off by saying, oh, everything's out of date, you've got to go and pay more money. I think that might encourage people to go and buy it anyway. So how did you get it published? I mean, yeah, you've obviously published it a couple of times.
I looked up, did my research, and I looked up doing it through Amazon, and I looked up doing it myself, and I chose to do it myself. So I do it all, got it printed. They store it, and I got it distributed by Bertrams, who then went bust. So they distributed it for a couple of years, and now I do it through Gardeners. So it actually goes from the people who print it and store it, they send it all to Gardeners, and then Gardeners do the supply.
Okay, so that's interesting. So rather than using Amazon's print-on-demand service, you actually go to a printer who prints it and then sends it to Amazon, and then that's the fulfilled by Amazon service?
Yeah, so it's. I looked at that it means I can sell it on my site more easily because I use them for marketing purposes a lot.
Yeah.
Obviously, because as a consumer champion, it's like, here, I know my stuff, look at that. And I did a couple of years later, I got an offer to publish it. And I thought, you know, all the vanity stuff, oh yes, I'm going to get a publisher to do it. And they were actually offering me 40%, which, as you know, is huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's way over what you normally get.
Oh yeah.
I still worked out that it would be more profit for me to keep self-publishing. So,
interesting.
So if you think, you know, the normal rate is like 10% or something, it just, there, you know, there is a word for me, people is like, you know, unless you're the next J.K. Rowling and you're going to do loads and they're going to do all the marketing for you. You have got to sell at least 10,000 books a year before it's worth, you know, make it. And I think it worked out for me. I had to sell 10,000 Right. More, yeah. You know, it's just mad. And the book that they had, the one of the ones that they had, their bestseller, I was outranking their bestseller by loads. So I thought, well, how? they're not going to sell more books than me. So let alone 10,000 more.
Yeah.
And when you think, you know, one store can only sort of sell a few thousand, it's just, you know, all books. It was a no-brainer for me. So I just kept the self-published.
No, that's exactly my experience. I my first book I self-published with Amazon KDP, but because you can see your sales figures in pretty much real time, you know, every day you can see how many you sold. I was really motivated to promote it because I could send out an email and I could directly see how that affected sales, or I could go to an event, or I could do something on social media or run a competition and see how it affected sales. And then I made the mistake maybe of offering it to a second edition to a publisher, and I get my 10%. And I fully expected them, it was going to be in their special educational needs catalogue that gets sent out to thousands of people on their website. And I fully expected but mine is just one amongst the hundreds of books they sell. And apart from that kind of initial, when it first came out, they've done nothing with it. And I don't see how many copies it sells. I get a measly payment every 6 months. And so my motivation to promote the book just went completely because I had no idea how what I was doing was affecting sales. I think, when you self-publish, whatever method you go through, whether it's you're using a printer or doing a print-on-demand company, just being in control and seeing your sales figures makes such a difference, doesn't it? It really does encourage you to do more of what works. And to try things out. As we sit here, obviously this is a podcast so people can't see it, but you've got this amazing banner behind you that has The One Show and BBC News, The Times, Radio 4, The Sun, ITV News. I'm trying to see what else is on there. Daily Mail. Have you been featured in all those places? And did that come about as a result of the book? I'm intrigued.
I think when the book came out in October 2014.
Yeah.
So a year before the laws changed. And I started the blog in sort of 2012, and I started to get media work on 2013. So I got November 2013. So I just started to get dribs and drabs. I was on Radio 5 and BBC Breakfast on how to complain effectively, and then did a couple of bits and pieces the following year. But the book gives you that more authority. So when people look at it, they go, oh, okay. And then particularly when they look on Amazon and they see it's a bestseller, it just gives you that bit more of an authority. So now the media is, you know, it's part of my income stream now. You know, I get paid to do the media work. So certainly the books sort of helped that. And then obviously the second book came out in 2019. So it just all adds to that whole credibility stuff.
So what else has come about as a result of the book? I mean, has other stuff come about besides the media?
I don't know. I think it's probably a lot of the media, but obviously that's another income stream. But it's used for marketing, so it's an incredible marketing tool. So when I go, for example, when I go and do media stuff, you know, other experts will go and do their stuff, get paid or not get paid, and come away. I leave them with a book, and I leave them with a useful book. So the producers and the researchers have got the book in the office. So I've even seen like the Ripoff team sort of actually have the book and use it, you know, so that really helps. I think as a marketing tool, it's really good to actually take them, because then they remember you and you go on the database and all that kind of stuff, but you've physically got a presence. Your book is a physical presence that they're using, and it's helpful, you know. It's even better than even if you go on as an expert with a novel, you could leave that because somebody might read it, but you actually leave, you know, an actual physical book that people are going to use in the office. It has that extra extra bit of usefulness, you know, that it's not just going to go, I've read it, I've put it in a drawer, it's out, and people will go, I've got a book for that, as soon as somebody says there's a problem,
here you go, I can help you with that, read this book. I bet your branding really helps as well. I don't know that many people want to be known as the complaining cow, but I guess it must have worked for you.
Yeah, well, I see, I don't mind that because I didn't come up with it. It's literally, I often get asked how did it all come up. And I literally, in my Facebook page, bear in mind this is back in 2012, I just put, I'm going to set up a blog. People said, I'm going to put up a blog, you know, so I was asking people whose stories I'd helped. And I said, I'm going to write the blog. What should I call it? And so people, a couple of suggestions. One was the complaining cow. Another was the squeaky wheel. I think there was something else. So I put the top ones up for a vote and people voted and the complaining cow won. And so that's how it became. But the name, you know, people don't remember Helen Dewdney. They can't spell Dewdney for a start. So, you know, but the complaining cow, once you mentioned the complaining cow, people put in the complaining cow.
I had exactly the same thing with my business name. I was like, when I started doing proofreading, I was like, Alison Thompson proofreading, you know, just boring things. And my mum said, you're like everybody's proof fairy. You come along and sort their mistakes. And I was like, proof fairy? No, I can't use that. That's really unprofessional. But it stuck. And now people, I'll say my name and then I say the proof fairy. Oh, yes, I've heard of you. So
people remember it. And I'm sure it sticks more. The fact that somebody else thought of it. Mm. It's that, well, somebody else thought it was a good idea.
Yeah.
So you've got that, you know, you've got that as well.
Yeah, it's not some egotistical thing, is it? Oh, I'm going to call myself the proof fairy because I'm magical. It's not that. It's come from someone else who's seen something there. And if they can see it, other people can. Same with complaining cow, I guess it's.
It's really, and it's easy to sort of take the compliment because I can instantly say, I didn't come up with it. You know, my friend came up with it. And they all voted on it. So, you know, you don't have that whole imposter syndrome of going, oh, no, I don't know, I don't know. And my friend did it. Mm. But I've only once had it was Ben Thompson, BBC Breakfast. And he said, I can't say the complaining cow. He was so polite and so nice. And I'm sitting there going, before we're on air, and I'm going to him, you can say it. It's my brand. Please. I can't call you the complaining cow. I can't call you the complaining cow. It's like, stop being so polite. You can. It's my name. But I always remember that. That was years ago. It was one of my first appearances on BBC Breakfast. He was just so, because it came up in the auto queue and he went, I can't call you that. You can. You can.
And today we're talking to Helen Dewdney, the what?
I can't remember now if he did it or not, but I do remember him sitting there going, it was really uncomfortable. And he went,
oh, God.
But usually people, it does start people off going, I love your name, or or they'll say, tell me about the story about how you how you came in. But that's a little bit more annoying because you think, actually, I'm on here to empower people, telling them a story about how I got my name is taking time away from empowering people. But you know, that was one of the ones at BBC Breakfast. I was like, stop talking about the name and ask questions that will help people.
Yes, yeah, nobody cares. Nobody cares why I'm called the complaining
cow. Cares about the name.
They do care about how to complain. Yes, exactly. so you said the first book came out in 2014 and then...
2014, yeah.
The second one a couple of years later?
December 2019.
Oh, okay, quite a few years later then. So... what have you learned about yourself through writing those two books, especially given that there was a kind of a gap between them? So
that my grammar is not as good as I thought it was.
Okay.
So you're like that as the proof fairy. I have a very, very, very good friend who's an editor and he actually does the two jobs. Although I know they're normally two different jobs, editing and proofing, but he is
as well.
Yeah, he is brilliant and he does both, and he edits my stuff on, you know, just everything that I do. And I'm having a real problem with passive voice at the moment. I keep using passive voice apparently, and the grammar, because I used to be a bit of the grammar police and I don't do that now. So I've really learned, even when I was a governor at the primary school, I would pick things up and everything and I'd go, no, I'm not going to do it now because I've just seen so much more. No, I'm not going to pick it up on other people, as well as the whole thing about, you know, other difficulties people may have. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was, yeah. So the biggest thing was, yeah, you shouldn't go around thinking that you're okay in your grammar. It's not as, you know, other people, your general people reading it wouldn't notice, I think. But for me, it was like, oh, God, Marcus, it's just like, oh, why did I get that wrong? Or sometimes it's still okay and it's still readable, it's fine. He just perfects it, you know. So that's something that I would say, that, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are at writing, it doesn't matter how good really you know your grammar is, but having that expert eye over it and that independent eye is just it's so helpful, and you need it. Doesn't matter how good you think you are, you will always miss something.
And not just for grammar mistakes as well, but also just for that kind of sanity check, because you know what you're writing about, and it's so easy to kind of assume a level of knowledge in the reader.
Yes, because
you have that knowledge, and then you write something and they're just left going, oh, what? I've got no idea what she's talking about here. So yeah, yeah, I think
he's very good at, when I do, not particularly the book, but even if I write stuff that I know is going to go in the next book, you know, put stuff on the blog that would be the next book for businesses, he'll go to, who's your audience? And they won't know this, and what are you trying to say here? So they ask the questions as well. So it's good having the questions and asking, you know, I've just done, because it is that knowledge that you just think, I know it. And now it's really obvious, but it isn't to people. I've just done just had an interview with a researcher for Morning Live for later on in the week. And I was half an hour on the phone, but I felt like I was repeating myself and that I was saying all the stuff that I have said 1,000 times. But I know it because I've said it 1,000 times, and he was fascinated by it. So, and then he was getting it confused. So, yeah, it's that kind of thing that, you know, I've learned that I've got to, you know, actually have that extra eye and to get that check back. But just because I've got the knowledge, other people haven't. I learned not to take... It's a hard lesson not to take the reviews personally, because occasionally get the odd review, the odd poor review. You just think, why? Because that's, you know, I've got like 200 good reviews here. So why is that? That it really stands out. But then as a consumer champion, or when I work with businesses, I say you take the top five and you take the bottom five and you ignore them. And then you look at what's left. Because if you've only got a few poor ones, then actually people see through it all anyway.
Yeah.
If you can't take the top five and the bottom five away, then there aren't enough reviews there anyway to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're taking that, and if you've got loads and loads and loads of review, you know, 5%, you know, whatever, and then you're left, I think, with a better picture.
Yeah.
You're always going to get people, particularly if you've got quite a social media presence, you know, like I have, and I get trolled, and I'm pretty damn sure that those trolls have written a review.
Not good.
But, you know, because quite often it's not a verified purchase, or if it's a verified purchase, I just look back on it now and think, oh, well, at least it cost you.
You got some money from it as well. So.
But yeah, so I think you have to just be sort of careful, and just, if it's on Amazon, you just don't respond to the reviews. You just, you don't. And then you use any that are funny, or, you know, the ones that are really good, you know, you use that in your promotional stuff.
Yeah.
But if they're ones that are just a bit off the wall, that you can ask people's opinion about it. So you can use it in your marketing. So you might tweet out, this was the latest review, what do you think? And then you'll get lots of people who'll go, well, that's very rude. And so they'll be supportive. In the majority of cases, people will be supportive to you. The best one that I had was, bearing in mind it's a book, that somebody put the wrong size stockings. You know, you can't do anything about that. All you can do is laugh. But I used it again. I used it, took the screenshot, put it out, and said, you know, I don't think the book fitted. But it's still a way of being, instead of doing the same old trite that you're putting out about your books, you know, it's just because of using it. But don't take it personally. It's a hard lesson, but be ready for it. I think, you know, for anyone that's starting to write, but be ready for the poor reviews, and don't take any notice.
very, very true. Yeah, I mean, I was really lucky. It took a long time till I got anything that wasn't a 5-star review on my first book, and it was a 3-star review, and it kind of said, oh, it's a bit short, and it wasn't really relevant to because I live in America, and I was kind of, well, it wasn't written for you in America, and why did you buy my book anyway, and look what you've done, and people are going to hate me now because I've... Blah, blah, blah. And then you have to take a step back and go, it's just one person. You're not going to please everyone, are you?
Yeah. And also, as a consumer champion, I say to consumers that if it's all 100% good reviews, they're going to be fake, you know.
Yeah.
So actually, because of people's nature, and because there are, you know, people, whatever you want to call them out there, there will always be people who will write negative stuff about people. So to not have any... would get people questioning why. And then when you get the odd bizarre one that doesn't fit with the previous 30 good ones, then people make up their own minds. You know, they you don't need to point it out to anybody. They'll realise.
No, it's really good advice. Yeah, just don't take it to heart, and don't, it's not the be all and end all. Getting reviews is brilliant. You need to get reviews. They're the kind of lifeblood of Amazon, especially, to have reviews, good or bad, actually, because it means people have bought it and thought something of it.
Yeah.
to write a review, whether they're saying it's awful, you know, at least they thought it was awful enough that they could write a review about it, which in itself is quite something. But yeah, just don't get too hung up on it.
Don't feel frightened of asking people to write a review.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing. Ask people to write a review, because I, for a short time, I've been supplying Amazon, which distributor, for a couple of months. And so I've been able to say to people, would you like it signed? So I'm signing the copies. Obviously, for my site, I can do it, but even through Amazon, I've been able to do it. Mm-hmm. And then say, on the compliment slip, please do a review if you feel able to. And some of them have. So it goes through as a verified purchase, because when I sell it on my site, people can still do a review, but it hasn't got as much weight because it's not a verified purchase. Yeah. So it swings and roundabouts.
What other tips would you have for aspiring authors, especially maybe people who have a hobby, have an interest, have maybe started a blog about it like you did? What tips would you give them on turning that?
Yeah, if you've got a blog, or even if you haven't, start one, because you just start writing posts and then you take some of those blog posts and you put it in the book. And I got that tip from Jeremy Clarkson years and years ago.
Right.
Who said he'd have got a blog, and one of his books, I know he's got loads, one of his books was mostly, he said, his blog posts.
Ah.
And I thought, well, that's good, because that's, you got it, you know, I've had it edited already, and that just goes into the book. Mm-hmm. And I did that a lot with the second book as well. So you get content for your blog, but you also then just move it over to the book and then format it in the way that you want, you know, for your book. So it's a really good double whammy, because you've got, nobody's going to look on your blog for 100 pages or 200 pages of your content of a book to find it.
Yeah.
So you still put on all those posts, and now you can buy the book to find out more.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, ideal blog for promoting your book and getting the ideas. You start stuff, and also you start getting feedback on that content, and so you know what people want and what you can put in.
Yeah.
So I think that's sort of a big tip, is definitely, repurpose stuff. Also, another tip I would say definitely is you have to promote it, and you have to keep promoting it. Mm-hmm. As a self-publisher, no one else is going to do it for you. And even if you get a publisher, they aren't going to do it for you anyway, because you're not JK Rowling. I push it out all the time. I certainly learn more about launching. I didn't launch it, either of them, well. Get that build up. Get the build up before it's coming. Get people excited and talking about it, and have your offer ready for when it's actually on the day of sale. You know, get that offer ready. So I've learned that. The next time, you know, I will do that. Allow the long lead in time to do it, and then just carry on promoting it. Get it, you know, reviewed if you can, if you've got any relationship with anybody that's good. So I've had, you know, who reviewed my book, Paul Lewis, and my second book, by the time I got my second book out, I knew lots of people in the media. So Paul Lewis did the foreword, and I got Judge Rinder doing a testimonial. So that's another thing that was great for the books, that, you know, he did a testimonial from that, and then I interviewed him for my blog. Mm. So the book led to that. So there's always, you know, opportunities from books. And Matt Allwright did a review. So I've got all that from it. So So definitely things come from that. When you asked about what comes from, you know, what's come from the book, I forgot actually that actually coming from the book of media work was getting an interview with Judge Rinder, Rob Rinder. So you've got to promote it, and promote it in different ways. So as soon as somebody reviews it, put the review out. Mm-hmm. If somebody asked you a question about the book, say, somebody asked me this, da, 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 or ask questions about your book, you know, the things that you answer in your book. You've got to be marketing. So I push stuff out most days, not every day, because I'm promoting other things as well as giving out tips and, you know, questions or whatever. But yeah, you've just got to keep on promoting it, because you'll just watch it slip down the rankings if you don't.
Yeah, no, it's so true. I think people think they'll publish a book and put it out there, and then it will just, people buy it. And I mean, there's something like 11 million, 12 million books on Amazon, aren't there?
So that's right, yeah.
The chances of anyone coming across your book by accident is it's not going to happen. Yeah. You have to tell people it's out there, don't you? And you have to keep telling them it's out there. And yeah, I mean, every now and then you'll get a little flurry of sales at the same time and Amazon will boost it. And yeah, if you can get into the charts, then you get that visibility. But still, people still have to be looking for your book quite specifically.
Yeah, and it's still hard because I've got a presence. I've got, you know, the Facebook page. I've got, you know, a group. I'm on Twitter. In the media and stuff, and still people say to me, oh, you've got a book. I'm just like, well, it's been out 6 years.
Yeah.
It's been quite crucial in a lot of the work that I do. It's an image everywhere. It's in the image in the back of social media stuff, but people still get frequently go, oh, you've got a book? What's your book?
Gosh.
It just shows how much you've got to promote it, because it will feel like to you that you are pushing out, people will get sick of it, but you've got to remember that people just scroll by because they're seeing thousands of this stuff, just like you and I and everyone scrolls past it. You've seen other people's messages 20 million times. You just don't remember it.
Yeah, no, that's right. But the people who haven't come across you before, somebody shares it and it goes into a feed of someone who's not seen it before, and then they'll stop because it's new, because it's fresh to them. And then if they see you another 50 times, well, by the 30th time, they're probably going, seen that before.
But even
then they won't even see it at all.
By that point, tweets people go that you just go past. You don't remember. You know, it's just like rescheduling your social media posts and stuff. It doesn't matter because people just scroll on by if they're not interested. Yeah. People have got to see you. You've got to see your thing that you're selling 10 times before they consider it anyway. So promote it.
But I think also having that strong, whether it's the strong cover, the strong title for you, it's kind of the strong brand name that's associated with the books. And we were saying before we started recording this, I remember you. I remember coming across you in some way, probably 8 or 10 years ago. And I don't quite know why, but I know the name. I know The Complaining Cow. So when you applied to me on the podcast, I was like, oh, The Complaining Cow. Hang on. Ah, I've heard of her. It just shows the strength of having either a really striking cover image or a really striking author name, possibly, or a really striking book title. That people will then identify with that and will recognise it, and that can be really powerful, can't it?
Because it's interesting, because although I am The Complaining Cow and my blog is The Complaining Cow and the book title is How to Complain and it's got Helen Dudney, The Complaining Cow, underneath, I think that's pretty clear that I'm the author and I'm The Complaining Cow. But the people that I still get sort of queries from, people going, I've got The Complaining Cow book, or they think that the book is The Complaining Cow, but they don't realize there's everything else. So although you get the people who say, I don't know, you've got a book, you get the people who buy the book who think the book is called The Complaining Cow, because they don't they're associated with me. So it's quite interesting that it's obviously a strong brand name, but it just shows how, you know, the more you've got out there, the more people you're going to reach, because then you go, oh, well, actually you've got this and this as well.
Definitely. It's those different touch points, isn't it? And reaching people in different ways and with different content. And then eventually you'll hopefully get the sale and bring them into your little tribe. So what's next for you? You mentioned earlier that you're writing a book for businesses, I think.
Yeah, it's been on the back burner for a long time. But so one for businesses, it would be about sort of customer service and customer experience. Because I'm a consumer champion, I know what frustrates and annoys people. So it's a case of sort of putting, you know, lots of people, there's lots of customer service, not like there's a gap like there was for this book. There isn't a gap necessarily for customer service and customer experience. There are lots of books written about that, but there isn't a book for customer service, customer experience written from the consumer point of view.
Right.
So it's going to come from, this is what I'm writing about because I'm a consumer champion. So I know what your customers want. So here are some ideas. So putting that together, and also another book on how to go from how to get free PR, which I was doing at the beginning, to getting paid for it, because then I'm publicising my book, but also getting paid for it. And obviously the quick route is you pay somebody, you know, for PR, which is a short term win, unless you're going to pay somebody over a long period of time, which is one route. And then the other route is doing all the different things that I did, which is work. You know, it's not going to be book of contacts. It's work to build up the relationships and that kind of stuff. So that will probably come out. So that's book four, but I think it'll come out third, if you see what I mean. Because it was quite easy to write.
So
I think that's going to come out, and that will hopefully help businesses sort of boost their own PR without having to pay
Right, yeah. And the books are so important in that whole sort of piece, aren't they? So, I mean, my book was about ADHD, and I kind of started getting into that whole zone of I was invited to speak at conferences mm-hmm. and things. And then a story broke on the news, and I had Sky News come around and interview me about this story about ADHD. And I was on LBC entering into a debate with Peter Hitchens about whether ADHD existed or not. The interesting thing was, though, that, you know, I kind of, by writing this book, I suddenly put myself in this expert position. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then media were coming to me. And yeah, I think writing a book can be that kind of first stepping stone, can't it? In increasing your profile, definitely, you, your business, and becoming the expert. And then you do have to work at it, but then it starts coming back to you because you're known as the person to go to.
Absolutely. It's definitely really helps with credibility big time.
Yeah, really, really interesting experience. Yeah, yeah. Helen, it's been fantastic talking to you today. Not every day I have a complaining cow on the show. So
I'm the complaining cow, please.
So where can people find you online?
Well, if they stick the complaining cow in Google, they will get all the pages. But if you go to www.thecomplainingcow.co.uk, that's my website, so you can buy books there. If you want to support the independent trader rather than going to Amazon. And then you can see my merchandise as well, because I've now got mugs and clothes and stuff, which is drop shipping. I don't do that, but the link to that's there. Mm-hmm. But also you can find me on Twitter at Complaining Cow, LinkedIn, Helen Dewdney. What else is there? There's a Facebook page, The Complaining Cow. There's a Facebook group. So if you are in business and you sell to people, that's a free Facebook group which is called Increased Sales Customer Service with Compassion, Care and Integrity. So that's a group where we discuss, you know, difficult customers or vulnerable customers, or experience how to exceed expectations, how to get customers turned into super fans who they do the heavy lifting and marketing for you, and all that kind of stuff in that group. So if you're a business that more or less sort of sells one to many rather than one to one sort of services, then join that group. Okay. Where else? I'm on Instagram, but I don't understand it. So I think I'm there as Helen Dash Dewdney, but I don't. Find me on Instagram and tell me what I'm doing wrong, tag me and whatever. I don't even understand that. So I'm there because I started a couple of months ago because I just thought, I think it should be on here, but I don't know what I'm doing. But there's nice pictures of my dog on there.
Cool.
I think that's all of them.
All over the place. But if people go to Google and search for The Complaining Cow, they're going to find you.
Yeah. But also if you go on the www.thecomplainingcow.co.uk, there's also Connect with me, and there's a list of everything, all my freebies and stuff on there as well.
Fantastic. I'm sure people will go and find out more about you. Helen, thank you so much for being guests on the podcast today. It's been wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
For being my guest on the show today. Her books, How to Complain and 101 Habits of an Effective Complainer, are available from Amazon, or better still, buy them from her website, thecomplainingcow.co.uk, where there's loads of info about consumer rights. You can also find her all over the internet as The Complaining Cow. All the links are in the show notes. If you're a blogger or you have a specialist interest and you'd like to turn that into a book, then I'd love to help. Visit my website, theproofairy.com, where you can get a free workbook and book a free call with me. All the episodes of this podcast are there, and you'll find details of how you can apply to be a guest on the show. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please subscribe, share it, rate it, tell your friends about it, and please do leave a review for it on iTunes. This has been a Proof Fairy production, and I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.